Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Check in on Asia-Pacific markets. They are trading higher this morning as investors watch out for the latest indications of business and consumer confidence in Australia and Japan. Those surveys are due out today. Joining me now to break down all the market action is Shane Oliver. He joins us live from Sydney, where he is the chief economist and head of investment strategy at AMP Capital. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning, Michelle. Fortunately, it's not 35 degrees here in Sydney, it's only about 22. Nice temperature.
Pleasant day. Terrific. Let's start this morning in the US, though, where JP Morgan Chase Chairman and CEO Jamie Dimon is making headlines with his annual letter to shareholders. It's a pretty long missive. I have to say it's not that optimistic. While Dimon sees opportunity of artificial intelligence as a whole, he argues that the war in Ukraine and hostilities in the Middle East pose risks that could eclipse World War II. And he thinks that abnormally large government deficits and persistent inflationary pressures could push interest rates to 8%. To be fair, he cites a range, 2 to 8%. It's quite a broad range. If this was anybody other than Jamie Dimon, I doubt we'd be talking about this. Interest rates are supposed to fall this year, not rise by several percentage points. But he is, after all, at the pinnacle of Wall Street, and his bank stock is up more than 50% over the past year. So, Shane, what do you make of Jamie Dimon's concerns? Is U.S. debt really that big of a concern, or should we be hedging against the possibility of higher rates, not lower ones?
Look, to be honest with you, I think it is just another opinion. There's lots of views out there, and that's what makes a marketplace. He's someone that can't be ignored. I have a lot of respect for J.P. Morgan and Jamie Dimon in particular, but 8% seems a bit rich to me. I think if you took interest rates to 8% in the US, it would mean much, much higher bond yields, which would cause major problems for US borrowers. Ultimately, particularly the housing market would be incredibly sensitive to that, and I think you'd end up with a major, major recession if that had to happen. Our view remains that interest rates will come down this year, that we are seeing a decline in inflation. It's perhaps not quite as rapid as we thought earlier this year, but it is occurring, and that's been helped by a pickup in supply, more workers in the US economy, and increased productivity, which will enable those rate cuts. But you can't rule out, you can never say never to these things, but I think 8% is probably going to be over the top. Maybe in a few years' time if inflation takes off again, but I don't think we'll see 8% this year or next year.
I'm sure that's a relief for many of our listeners. All right, Shane, let's turn to artificial intelligence. Dimon says AI could end up being as impactful as electricity, the printing press, or computers. JP Morgan now employs some 2,000 AI specialists. Some work on risk control, others on fraud or marketing. We talk a lot about this on the show, but aside from chipmaker NVIDIA, whose share price has more than tripled over the past year, what do you think are some of the best or very interesting ways to invest in AI?
Well, look, I agree with Jamie. I think this is going to have a huge impact on productivity, particularly in service-oriented companies, processes, which will end up being automated. That will free up workers to do other things, just as other technologies did in the past. So I don't think we should be overly alarmed unless you believe that AI is going to destroy us all, like how the computer in Space Odyssey back in 1968 and drop us out in space somewhere. I think that's unlikely, but obviously got to worry about these things and make sure we go the right path. But you can make an argument that the initial burst of activity is amongst those companies producing the infrastructure for it. And there is a risk that that's overdone. You know, there's a lot of interest in NVIDIA and others that supply chips for artificial intelligence computers, and that sentiment could be over the top and due for a correction, much like we had 20-odd years ago with the tech wreck. But I don't think we're anywhere near as overvalued as we were back then. So I'd probably be a little bit wary about those sort of that aspect of AI. But I would be looking out for companies which look to be early adopters of AI. That's probably where a lot of the opportunities are at present. Ordinary companies investing heavily in AI, and where there's potential significance for their use, particularly in the services sector. I think that's where things will be revolutionised. In between, there's another group who provide apps that take advantage of AI. And, of course, you know, many of your regular tech companies are in that category. They will benefit, but there's also a lot of interest in that. You could argue that's also a crowded trade, although not as much as NVIDIA is. So I'd be looking out for companies that will benefit from AI, and that's probably where the opportunities are for investors.
Well, thank you very much for a sense of the less crowded trades. Yesterday on this show, we talked about some under-the-radar Asian companies that may be set to ride the AI wave. And listener, you can check out the discussion on our podcast. We're on audio or Spotify. The show you want is Your Money with me, Michelle Martin. Now, one last question about Jamie Dimon before we move on, Shane. He's opposed to recent moves to ensure a split between the chairman and CEO roles in big companies. Goldman Sachs is currently under pressure to do this. I'm just wondering, though, is Dimon's opposition to this self-serving, or is it really grounded in good business practices? After all, Dimon holds both chairman and CEO roles at JP Morgan Chase. So should regulators, what do you think, Shane? Should regulators or markets prohibit the same person from acting as chairman and CEO at a listed company?
It's an interesting one. I don't have an overly strong view on it, but I would lean to the view that best governance practice is for a separation of the chairperson and the board, who are accountable to shareholders, and of course the operational management headed up by the CEO. And I think it's good to have that independent oversight from the board and an independent chairperson. So that would be my leaning. I think better governance, best practice governance, leans in that direction. But I can sort of understand with much smaller companies you might have combination of the roles, but I think, you know, big companies should really have a separation, and maybe regulators should impose some limit in terms of, you know, once you go beyond a certain turnover, or sorry, once you go beyond a certain market cap, then you should actually have a separation.
Shane Oliver is with us this morning. He's chief economist and head of investment strategy at AMP Capital. All right, Shane, let's take a look at broader U.S. markets. Now, U.S. stocks started the week more or less at a standstill following some pretty sharp swerves last week. The Nasdaq finished marginally higher. The Dow and the S&P 500 finished marginally lower. Investors are watching out for the latest data on U.S. inflation due out on Wednesday. Markets also gearing for a fresh round of corporate earnings, and we're seeing oil and other commodity prices rise. I'm curious what your take is on U.S. markets. Is this pause a good time to buy in, or are you concerned that things may have peaked?
I don't think we've seen the peak in the bull market that started back in 2022, the time of the peak inflation interest rate scare at that time. I think there's more to go, but I think the market is a bit tired. It's run too far, too fast. It's, you know, one point I think was up something like 10% year to date, and probably still is. It was up 9% after the recent falls last week. So it sort of got to a point where it was overbought. Valuations were getting stretched on some measures, and sentiment towards shares was very bullish. If you look at surveys of individual investors and newsletter writers, they were at levels often associated with corrections, i.e., once everyone gets bullish, it only requires a bit of bad news to cause a setback. And, of course, there's a bunch of risks out there. I mean, Jamie Dimon reporting to those geopolitical issues, which are significant and could spill over. Obviously, particularly issues in the Middle East with Iran and Israel would be a big one on that front. But the US election coming up as well. There's still uncertainty about when the Fed and other central banks will start cutting interest rates. And how much they will cut, still risk of recession is still there, even though it's taken a bit of a backseat at present. So I suspect we go through a bit of a consolidation, a bit of a correction. But ultimately, as growth remains positive and interest rates come down, I think shares will be able to move higher by year end. But right here, right now, you'd probably better holding off buying, looking for opportunities if markets come down further.
Ah, okay, so we're not at the peak yet. I'm sure many listeners are just thrilled to hear that. Shane, you recently published an article entitled The Seven Lasting Impacts from the COVID Pandemic, and these include more government debt, as well as a faster embrace of technology, both of which we've talked about to some extent this morning. Another lasting trend that you highlight is a lack of affordable housing. Now, why is this occurring, and why do you think it's here to stay?
Well, it's a particular problem in countries that have high immigration levels. But it's been made worse by the increased cost of building homes. Building material costs went up through the pandemic, and that seems to have lingered. And there's been a shortage of labour. So that's been a factor as well. Obviously, I'm in Australia. It's a big issue here. We're seeing record immigration levels, which has resulted in record population growth. At a time when we already had a shortfall of housing, and you know, to get things built these days has taken a lot longer and cost a lot more than it did pre-pandemic. But I understand that that's also an issue in other countries. Singapore has an issue on that front as well. Lots of people wanting to move into Singapore from elsewhere, just like lots of people want to move to Australia. That's causing an affordability problem. I think the pandemic made it worse by having those negative impacts on building material costs and labour costs. So that was a big factor there. Then it also led to a jump up in house prices as interest rates fell to record lows. And even though house prices have gone, interest rates have gone back up again, house prices don't seem to have fallen commensurately because it's distorted immigration patterns globally, such that countries like Australia and Singapore are seeing much stronger population growth than used to be the case. So it's sort of, you know, some of the trends were there before, but it seems to have been made worse by the pandemic. And once the dust settles, I suspect we'll end up with less affordable housing than we had prior to the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to turn to two markets here in Asia, Shane, for your take on them. Let's start with India. Bloomberg is running a piece that predicts India could overtake China as the largest contributor to global economic growth by the year 2028. Are you an India bull or bear, Shane? What do you think?
I'm a bull on the economy. I am concerned about the share market, though. We have seen at times markets run ahead of themselves. Most of the promise from the tech boom in 1999 was actually delivered, but share markets went through a horrendous a pullback in the interim through 2000-2003. So India has had a fantastic run over the last 5 years. Indian share market has roughly doubled. If you look at the Nifty, rather, it's roughly doubled. It's one of the most expensive markets in Asia, trading on a forward PE of 22, 23 times. So I think a lot of the good news is factored in, and my concern would be that it goes through some sort of correction, at least, if not a bear market at some point. At the other extreme, of course, yes, I agree, as population growth continues in India and then goes in reverse in China, as productivity growth continues to pick up in India, but is much more constrained in China, that will lead to a reversal in the relative importance of those two economies favouring India. But right here, right now, I think I've just used that phrase twice in this interview. The Chinese market is actually at the cheap end of Asian markets. It's trading on a forward PE 9 times. So you can make an argument that even though you might be a little bit more sceptical about China over the next 5-10 years and a bit more optimistic on India, the Chinese share market largely already reflects that. And likewise, so to the Indian share market. And consequently, you know, if you were to arbitrage between the two, you might consider selling India and buying China as part of a short-term trade. But on a long-term basis, you know, I wouldn't have any hesitation buying India on a 20-year view. It's just that I think there might be better opportunities in the next few years.
All right, Shane, before we let you go, I'd love to get your thoughts on the Singapore market. The Straits Times Index is more or less flat, has been through the first 3 months plus of the year. It's down 0.75% since January. The STI is really lagging behind the Dow and other key US indices. So I'm wondering, do you see good value here?
Well, there is. The Singaporean market is actually quite cheap. It's almost at the like China at the opposite end from where India is. In fact, when you look at the STI over the last 5 years, it's gone nowhere. In fact, it's down slightly, whereas the Indian share market has doubled. Obviously, issues about global trade have had an adverse impact on the Singaporean share market, but it is trading on a 45 times. Sorry, 11, not 5 times. That'd make it dirt cheap. 11 times, which is at the low end of Asian markets, and I think it does look quite attractive. Obviously, it would be affected, though, and perhaps the biggest risk would be, say, Donald Trump gets elected later this year.
Right.
I shouldn't laugh. I can't get circles on that one. But if he gets re-elected and slaps a 10% tariff on all imports to the US and a 50 or 60% tariff on anything coming from China, that will have a negative impact on global trade. Singapore is very exposed to global trade. And that could have a negative impact on the Singaporean market. So that's probably my only main concern about Singapore, but I do see good value there, and some might see it as a safer bet perhaps than buying China, as I mentioned earlier, given the geopolitical issues around China. So you could argue that buying, selling India and buying Singapore might be a better short-term trade than for some, or more comfortable trade than buying China, say.
Selling India, buying Singapore. This is the first time an analyst has raised that trade. Thank you very much, Shane, for the context and the tour of markets this morning.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
He's live from Sydney, where he's chief economist and head of investment strategy at AMP Capital. A very special guest today, Shane Oliver. When I come back, I'll give you a tour of local markets. Stay with me.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.